Welcome to Locus Focus. I'm Barbara Bernstein, your host for this weekly conversation about our place on the planet. On February 19th, the Oregon Department of Land Conservation and Development denied the coastal zone permit for Jordan Cove LNG. This is the third critical state permit for which Jordan Cove LNG has failed to qualify, and this latest denial asserted that the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission could not move Jordan Cove LNG forward without this coastal zone permit. As a result, the following morning, the FERC commissioners voted 2-1 against approving Jordan Cove LNG because they need more time to review the permit denials from the state of Oregon. Today, we look back at this epic week of Jordan Cove LNG permit denials with Allie Rosenbluth, organizer with Rogue Climate in Southern Oregon. Allie, welcome back to Locus Focus.
Hi, Barbara. Thanks so much for having me on.
I've been getting a lot of emails ever since these denials were announced, sort of coming with different impressions of what this means. And I got one, interestingly, from Stan.org up in, well, there in Canada and in Bellingham and also down in San Francisco. And they were basically seeing this as a real success when FERC did this denial of sorts. And so I'm wondering what your take is. Is it time to celebrate, or is there a whole lot more hard work that still has to happen?
I think that the answer right now is yes, and this is a huge win for our communities. It's been, you know, years and years and years of folks across the region putting pressure on the state of Oregon to assert its powers to stop this project, and that's finally what we're seeing, and that's exactly what we need to see to stop this project for good. And although this project isn't over for good, and it's going to take a lot more energy to make sure that Pembina withdraws completely from this project, it's still a really important moment to be celebrating and to like look back and see all of the incredible work that's been done to get us here.
Now, I want to talk about this whole permitting process, because this is probably making some people's eyes glaze over. They don't understand who all these agencies are. I think of all the agencies that have denied permits, the only one that people probably are familiar with is the DEQ, because that's where you go to get your emissions tested on your car. But they do other things besides that. So let's talk about, what was at stake? What does Pembina have to be able to do in order to be allowed to build the Jordan Cove LNG export terminal and the Pacific Connector gas pipeline?
Yeah, so to build this project, which would put our climate, our clean water, our clean air, private property, tribal resources at risk, the company needs to secure permits at the local, state, and federal level. And what we're seeing right now at the state level is that in May 2019, the Department of Environmental Quality denied a Clean Water Act permit for the Jordan Cove project. That's a really huge deal because that permit preempts the federal government. So that means that the state has final say on decisions that regard our state waters. So that was denied last spring.
But there was one caveat about that. It was sort of a moment to celebrate, but maybe not quite.
Well, the company has the opportunity to reapply. However, it's been, it's almost been a year. We're getting close to May. And we still haven't seen word from them that they are going to submit a new application. So we're, of course, still watching. But to have the DEQ, the Department of Environmental Quality, deny Jordan Cove with 200 pages of evidence as to why this project doesn't comply with state water laws is huge, even though there is a door that's left open. And of course, with all of these permit denials that we've seen, it's never an opportunity to stop fighting, but it is showing us that we are getting closer and closer and closer to stopping this project for good.
So it's actually over the summer, before the next major state permit was denied, there was some fights on the local level. And this one that I just happened by chance to be there for two hearings at the Coos Bay City Council, one in March and then one in October, around a dredging permit that supposedly the port was asking for, but it seemed like Pembina was actually funding everything, and the PowerPoint presentation in support of it was all marked with Pembina. And that permit was actually granted, I think, in January. So what was happening on the local level at the same time that these state permits were being considered?
Yeah, so at the local level, there were permits in Coos County, Coos Bay, and North Bend that had been approved. A lot of these permits had to do with dredging the Coos Bay estuary, so rezoning the estuary specific part of the estuary from a natural aquatic zone that has a lot of protections around that protect the Dungeness crab industry and the other fisheries that communities in the coastal, in the South Coast really rely on. But those permits are currently being appealed or will be appealed. So they're not an end all with the approvals that they've gotten now. There are a lot of really strong legal cases for our communities to hopefully win. And we also saw some really huge developments in the city of Coos Bay, which city council has previously been, you know, very supportive of this project. They actually tied on a permit to dredge the estuary for Jordan Cove LNG. And that tie, unfortunately, was broken by the mayor, who is supportive of the project. But this was after, like, hundreds of Coos Bay community members showed up in no LNG red T-shirts, had rallies outside of these hearings, you know, got hundreds of petitions sent in to city council, and really uplifted the work that the Lane Council of Governments, which was a non-biased agency that they had come in to review this permit, really uplifted that scientific work that they did that showed that this dredging permit would have a really big impact on the commercial fishing industry, which that community does really rely on.
Well, actually, when I went to those two hearings, it kind of reminded me of similar changes of tone in communities in Kalama, Washington, which is fighting the world's largest methanol refinery. And the first hearing that I went to about that, it was actually, I think it was the Clean Air Permit hearing for that back in January 2017. And the room was about divided half and half between supporters and opponents. And the elected officials were 100% in support of that project. And then a year ago, December, there was a final hearing for the environmental impact statement. And the room was packed with red shirts. I mean, it was overwhelmingly opposed to this project. And there were a number of elected officials actually who had changed their position. There were still a lot of county commissioner people who supported it. And it was, again, an example of watching what 3 years of, or 2.5 years of organizing had done to really shift the tone. And I saw the same thing in Coos Bay where about a year ago when I was at that first hearing, there were people there. I mean, there were definitely more opponents and supporters, but there was a small crowd. It wasn't well publicized. The hearing in October was packed and it was overwhelmingly against the project. Do you know, do you have a sense of like what kind of organizing has been going on in Coos County that has shifted the opinion so much? And I'm just curious how much your organization's been involved in making that change.
Yeah, so there have been really incredible community members in Coos County who have been at the forefront of fighting this project for over 15 years. And like some of those groups include Citizens for Renewables, who is spearheaded by Jody McCaffrey and Natalie Ranker. There's the Coast Range Forest Watch, which is a really incredible organization that also works on protecting the Elliott State Forest, among other things. There's the Coos Bay Surfriders, who just a year ago, or maybe more than a year ago now, officially opposed the project, which was huge for Coos Bay, and that's a really vibrant community organization as well. And then this spring, Rogue Climate actually opened our second office ever in downtown Coos Bay, and we hired an organizer who's a local from Coos Bay, who's passionate about stopping this project. And what's been great is that with that space, with that office, and our incredible organizer, Ashley, out there, there's a little bit more coordination between those groups that have brought so much to this campaign for so many years. So I think that, you know, in communities, as we have more opportunity to learn about how a project like Jordan Cove LNG or like the Klamath Methanol Refinery would impact our communities, the more that dissent grows. And I think that, you know, the more we're talking about this project and the more we're visible about wanting to protect our communities and protect the things like the commercial fishing industry and public safety, the more people are willing to come out to those hearings and wear red and talk in opposition to the project.
Well, I want to move ahead now to November 21st of the past year, because there was a very dramatic action that happened that day, and I'm just wondering how much impact that had on the further decisions made at the state level.
Yeah, so on November 21st, there was a huge rally outside of the Oregon State Capitol in Salem. I think there were nearly 1,000 people out in opposition to the Jordan Cove project, and folks were really calling on Governor Kate Brown to assert the state's rights to stop this project at all costs. And there were really incredible speakers, including Chairman of the Klamath Tribes, Don Gentry, Thomas Joseph, who's a Hoopa tribal member, Bill Gao, who's an impacted landowner, and so many more. While that rally was happening, a group of about a dozen people from impacted communities, including former Secretary of State Bill Bradbury, Emma Maris from Klamath Falls, the list goes on and on, impacted landowners, including Sandy Lyon and Chris Cates, they all decided to go into the governor's office and sit inside that office until Governor Kate Brown, you know, finally spoke out against this project. And they were later joined by over 75 people, so that room was packed, and the governor's eight staff were very responsive. The chief of staff ended up sitting in the sit-in to listen to people's concerns for about 45 minutes. He got Governor Brown on the phone pretty quickly once folks started sitting, and Governor Brown, of course, made her way there in the evening. Unfortunately, Governor Brown did not come out to oppose the project. However, she did say that she would push back if the federal government was to ever overstepped state powers when making the decision on this project, which was good news, but it didn't meet the demands that our communities had for her, which was to make a vocal statement in opposition to this project. So there were 21 people who ended up being arrested because they refused to leave her office when she did not make that statement. But fortunately, all of those charges were dropped, and so that was really exciting. That that day was really, really beautiful moment of seeing everybody from across the region, like, really coming together and really putting that pressure on the state of Oregon, which, you know, I think it is the result of that is all these permit denials that we've been seeing. So organizing works.
Well, you're listening to Locus Focus here on KBOO Community Radio in Portland, Seattle stations KBFG LPFM and KODX LPFM, and Radio Tacoma now. And today we're talking with Allie Rosenbluth, who's an organizer with Rogue Climate in Southern Oregon, and we're talking about the past week's permit denials for Jordan Cove LNG. And I'm thinking, as you're describing this, of the close to 1,000 people in the rotunda of the Capitol after the rally on the steps, all singing, "We've got the power." And the way it sounded and the echo, the way it echoed, and then there were these people flapping up and down this very large, beautiful parachute that was painted. And I was thinking about this kind of like the spiritual energy that was filling the rotunda. And my belief is that has some effect, as well as people sitting in the governor's office. And were you in the governor's office for most of that time, or did you spend some time down in the rotunda as well?
I was all over, everywhere. Hard to say.
Well,
but yeah, I did get to see the rotunda. I did hear the singing, and I saw some of what happened inside of the rotunda. And yeah, it was extremely powerful to bring all of the voices from the rally inside the space and to make sure that our state leaders heard us. And so I thought that was a really beautiful moment.
Now, I heard rumors that there were some people in Southern Oregon whose response to the demonstration was, "Well, now let's get back to work and, you know, do our hearings and do our comments and do the things we need to do to stop this." But I wonder how much you think that this demonstration what kind of impact it had on top of all the long 15 years of writing comments and attending hearings and doing all the different kinds of visibility things that people have been doing. Do you think that this protest actually contributed to the two decisions we'll get to now, but the other two state agencies that have the power to make or break Jordan Cove?
Yeah, I think every single thing that our communities have put forward to put pressure on the state of Oregon, whether it's comments, it's meetings with decision makers, or demonstrations like that, all of those things add up. And, you know, when they add up and we get permit denials like this, that's huge. And, you know, what's really incredible about the amazing community that's come together to stop Jordan Cove LNG is that everyone has very different opinions about what's going to work. And what we've learned to do over the years is to trust each other and trust that if this is a tactic or a demonstration that, you know, folks really think will be effective, then to like trust that they have the wisdom and the understanding of why. So, yes, and those comments. So, yes, that demonstration did impact. I believe it did impact the results that we saw in the last couple of days. But I also like those comments that people have been writing for 15 years and the like community education programs that people have been running have impacted, have all built something really beautiful together. So we wouldn't be here without every single one of those actions that people have taken.
Well, let's talk about the second permit that, well, didn't exactly get denied, but it's not happening, the Department of State Lands permit.
Yeah, so in December, was it January, actually? Yes, in January. It's hard to keep all these things straight. It's happened so fast. In January, the Department of State Lands told Pembina that they would not be giving them another permit extension for their removal fill application, which then prompted Pembina to withdraw their entire application from the agency. So that shows us that because the company withdrew, they could see the writing on the wall that this permit was going to be denied. So actually later we did get a draft decision from DSL, so what they were going to publish, that had some information redacted, but it was very clear that that permit was also going to be denied by the state of Oregon. And again, clear that the Jordan Cove LNG project, it just does not meet the standards that the state uses to protect our clean water and our climate and our communities. So that was another really exciting moment in this campaign. You know, even though it wasn't officially denied, the fact that Pembina withdrew their application and has not resubmitted something to DSL really shows us that our community's efforts to show why this project is so bad for the state of Oregon and to continue to show opposition is really effective.
Well, it seems like there were two things that I noted about the DSL situation. They were supposed to deliver a decision back in September, I believe, and they basically kicked the can down the road. And I know when I was down in Southern Oregon in October, people were really angry about that and frustrated. And I remember Stacey McLaughlin in Douglas County was saying, you know, I have to get my comments in on time. I can't get extensions. And there should be the same rules for Pembina as there is for us. And something seems to have shifted. I mean, because I think some people were afraid that DSL was just going to, you know, give them another extension for another 3 months. So what do you think shifted between September and January?
Well, I think that our communities made it very loud and clear at the Department of State Land hearings that we wanted this permit denied and that it needed to happen in the time frame that was fair. And I think with the FERC permit decision coming up, I think that Director of State Lands, Vicky Walker, I think was feeling the pressure to make a decision before that happened. And so the extension that Pembina was asking for that final time was to extend it to be after the FERC decision. And I think at that moment, the agency was still missing information from Jordan Cove. And as we can clearly tell in their denial, that was published and is on their website if anyone wants to check it out. that like the project just didn't comply with the standards of the removal field permit. So I think that, you know, our communities in the last couple of months just have been getting louder and louder and louder about this project, and that's what we need to do to ensure that it stopped for good.
Now, in the draft of the denial from DSL that's on the website, is it clear whether or not they were going to be denying it with prejudice or without prejudice, which means whether they Pembina would have an opportunity to resubmit the application?
No, it's not clear. However, the state of Oregon really, it would be really tough for them to legally defend a denial with prejudice. So I assume that it was not. But you know, even though a denial with prejudice or without prejudice like opens up the door for someone to reapply, to get denied these major permits by the state of Oregon for a project that you've been trying to prove is worthy for over a decade is huge, and it looks terrible to your investors. Even if there is a door open to reapply, it's still a huge win, and it's still something that shows that this project is not viable.
So then, as you were all waiting for FERC, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, to come up with their decision, which everybody was expecting to be basically an approval. I remember I saw Dan Sears just a couple weeks ago, and he said, actually he was on the show very recently, and he said, I'm 95% sure FERC is going to approve it. But while waiting for that, suddenly I get this email from you about the Department of Land Conservation and Development. So was that a surprise that that permit denial came when it did, which was basically a day before FERC was going to release its decision?
Yeah, so we knew that the Coastal Zone Management Act permit was going to be decided sometime between the week, or the February 17th and February 28th, because of the stay, so the pause that the company put on that process was ending on the 17th. So we knew it was going to happen sometime in the next 2 weeks. We were really surprised that it came out the night before the FERC hearing, or the FERC commission meeting. So it did take us by surprise that it came out right before the meeting. But if you read the denial from DLCD, it's very clear that what they're doing is saying, hey, FERC, without this permit, you can't continue to consider Jordan Cove LNG. And that was exactly the result of that denial. So, you know, when the state denied the Coast Zone permit for Jordan Cove LNG, not only did they say this project is not good for Oregon's waters, our coastal communities, our commercial fishing industries, our climate, but also Oregon has the power to say no to this project, and that's exactly what we're doing. And so the result of that was the next morning, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission voting to not move the project forward that day because they hadn't yet considered what the state of Oregon had said in their denial. So it's not an end for FERC. You know, we could hear back from them anytime now, but it is still absolutely huge that after 15 years of trying to get this project through state and federal permitting processes, they still have nothing to show. Now, and that's pretty incredible.
Now, do you think that if the Department of Land Conservation and Development had waited to announce their rejection of the Coastal Management Act permit till after the FERC hearing, that maybe for the FERC meeting, that maybe FERC would have gone ahead and given the approval?
It seemed, while we were watching that meeting, it seemed like the commissioners thought that the project was going to move forward. So Commissioner Chatterjee, he voted yay for the project. He's very supportive of the Jordan Cove project. He's a Trump appointee. And then Commissioner Glick, who is the sole Democrat on the commission, had this 5 minute long dissent about, you know, why Jordan Cove is such a bad project for the U.S. economy, for the climate, for landowners, for endangered species in Oregon. And he voted no in a dissent. So So we actually, while we were watching the FERC commission meeting, thought that it had been approved while he was dissenting, because why else would he be dissenting? But quickly after he stopped talking, Commissioner McNamee, who's the final commissioner on the FERC commission, said, actually, I'm going to vote no today because there's new information from the state of Oregon that I haven't considered yet. So it kind of seemed that the commission was confused itself on what it was doing. I don't think Glick or Chatterjee had any idea that McNamee was going to be voting no. They seemed pretty surprised there. Because of the state of Oregon's denial the night before, we saw FERC go from a 2-1 approval of Jordan Cove LNG to a 2-1 let's delay this for a little bit to make sure we're really considering what Oregon has to say. And one of the interesting things too is McNamee, who's also a FERC appointee or a Trump appointee, he actually said, I don't know if I'm going to be voting yes or no on this project in the future, but I do know that I don't have enough information right now to be confident about what I'm going to do. So we could hear back from them this week. We could hear back from them in months. We don't know, but we are celebrating because this is another day in which landowners do not have to start facing the challenge of eminent domain, which is triggered by the FERC approval.
Well, I keep looking at this, what is in that commissioner's mind where he wanted more information. And do you have a sense that the information that's in the denial of the Coastal Management Act permit might be persuasive to this guy? I mean, because what surprised me in all of this was I figured there's two Trump appointees. They're not going to bother to care what the state of Oregon says. They're going to just go ahead and rubber stamp it. And I understand, I don't know if I dreamed this or I actually read it somewhere, that one of the commissioners actually took offense to the idea that FERC would be a rubber stamp approval agency.
Yeah, so Commissioner Glick, the commissioner who voted no against Jordan Cove, he did say that an approval of Jordan Cove is a clear demonstration that FERC is a rubber stamp. So that was a pretty strong statement from Commissioner Glick, who's been the dissenting member of FERC for the last couple of years.
So what about, do you have any hope that, or faith that there is going to be enough of an open mind on the part of the commissioner who voted no because he wants more information, that he's actually going to look at the more information and let it help to persuade him?
Well, I think what's most important is that the state of Oregon is really setting themselves up to show that they do have the power to stop this project, right? And so even if the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission approves Jordan Cove LNG later on the road, that in no ways means that this project is going to be built. In 2008, Bradwood LNG, which was a similar LNG export terminal proposed in Astoria, which actually a much smaller proposal, was approved by FERC. That project was never built because they never got their state decisions. They never got state approvals. And to this day, there's no LNG export terminal in Astoria. That company went bankrupt. And we are hoping that Jordan Cove will have the same demise. So whether or not a project gets a FERC approval doesn't mean that it gets built, because the law shows that the state of Oregon has the power to permit this project through the Clean Water Act, the Clean Air Act, the Coastal Zone Management Act, and then also through state property rights.
So you're listening to Locus Focus here on KBOO Community Radio in Portland and in Seattle stations KBFG LPFM and KODX LPFM and on Radio Tacoma. And today we're talking with Ellie Rosenbluth, who's an organizer with Rogue Climate in Southern Oregon, about this week's permit denials for Jordan Cove LNG. Well, I want to do some, strategizing about or considering what some of the different strategies might be. I have a inside voice I every so often hear from third hand, a friend of a friend who works for Pembina, actually, and has been feeding my friend information about what he thinks is going on. He's not very high level, so it's not like he's in the decision-making thing. But what my friend told me a couple weeks ago was, I think it was after the denial, or after they withdrew their DSL permit application, that they were going to go litigate. What they're counting on is that they can, with the Trump administration trying to gut the powers of state agencies to have any control over their own environmental protection, that they'll be able to trump state law and be able to build Jordan Cove. So is your sense that that is actually a possible reality? And is that the only route that Jordan Cove might have at this point?
I think it's a possible reality that Pembina tries to challenge state powers to stop this project. I think that it's very unlikely that that will be a successful path forward for them. The powers the state have are very clear and are very strong. And Pembina would not only have to win challenging one of those state powers, but many of them, which just would be completely unprecedented. So we do not think that that's a viable path for Pembina. We'll see if they try it anyway. What's interesting is that they still, you know, all these state permits that have been denied or withdrawn, they haven't even muttered an instance of reapplying, right? So we are really hopeful that this is the slow demise of this project, and our communities are continuing to put pressure on Pembina to fully withdraw from this project, and continuing to show their investors that this is not a viable project and that Southern Oregon won't be steamrolled by any administration to build this project.
Well, your wonderful state senator down your way, Jeff Golden, who, it's interesting, I was looking at a lot of photographs of him at hearings when I was putting together the slideshow for my Jordan Cove radio documentary, and then I got to see him at the celebration at the Department of State Lands a couple weeks ago. And, oh, he's the guy who was in the front row. But he was saying, when he spoke at that rally, the Thank You DSL rally a few weeks ago, that he thought that Pembo would need a much better lawyer than anybody he could imagine existed in order to pull off this lawsuit to actually overturn state law. So I figure that Jeff Golden knows a lot more about the law than I do, probably even than you do. But what do you think of that? I mean, do you feel like it's really that from the people that you've talked to, and I'm sure that you've been talking to a lot of legal sources, that this is an impossible task for Pembina to really pull this off?
When a state has made it so clear that a project like Jordan Cove LNG does not meet the qualifications to receive any of the critical permits that it needs, that is clear that that project is not going anywhere. And Pembina might, you know, we can speculate that Pembina might try to challenge those laws, but yes, to be able to like challenge and win in the many different arenas that the state of Oregon has the power to stop this project, just like really is not a viable path forward. And this project has been going on for over 15 years and has never proven that it is viable in this community and has never proven that it won't harm our clean water, our climate, private property rights, tribal resources, and our communities. And so I don't know what the company is thinking at this moment. What I do know is that I'm seeing them slowly retreat in our communities. They've laid off staff in Coos County. Their office is barely ever open in Coos Bay anymore. They've withdrawn from the Cultural Resources Working Group with the tribes. And they've just been dumping money into this project for the last couple of years, tons and tons and tons of money into this project to try to get it permitted, and they keep failing. So if I was an investor of Pembina right now, I would have big questions around, hey, why are you continuing to dump money into the Jordan Cove LNG project when Oregon has made it very clear that, one, you aren't going to get permits for this project, and two, that they are going to assert their authority to do so. So if I was Pembina right now, I would be trying to figure out what is our escape route out of the Jordan Cove LNG project. And we will see. We don't know, but we will see. And, you know, this is no way a time for our communities to stop speaking out against this project, or to think that, we can wash our hands from Jordan Cove LNG. Right now is time for us to continue to keep the pressure on and continue to show our communities that we can build jobs and clean energy, and that we don't need a fracked gas export project in our communities, period.
Well, last October, when I was down in Coos Bay, there was a lot of talk about how Pembina is actually trying to sell part of Jordan Cove. What do you know about that, and what might that mean to you?
Yeah, so last summer, the company announced that they were trying to sell, I think, 50% of the Jordan Cove LNG project. And we weren't too surprised to hear that, because we know that the company does not have the $10 billion in hand to be able to build this project. So they're still looking for investors to back Jordan Cove LNG. And to my knowledge, they've had no movement on that, because our communities are so fiercely opposed to this project. Southern Oregonians, Northern Californians, our allies up in Portland and across urban Oregon, we are continuing to make this project look like a bad investment, because it is. Fracked gas is not a future for Oregon. We want investments in clean energy, not fracked gas.
Kind of interestingly, next week I'm going to have a guest on who's going to be talking about how the oil and the gas fracked oil and gas plays in the United States and also in British Columbia are playing out. So there might not even be gas. It's in the quantity, and these are like, what, 50-year-long projects that are being proposed. So that's another concern that maybe can be thrown out, is where do you think all this gas is going to come from 50 years from now, besides all the dangers and damage it would do between now and 50 years from now?
Yeah, and we just recently in Oregon saw some of the danger that fracking does with the illegal radioactive waste dumping that happened out in eastern Oregon. So, every day we're seeing more reasons why fracking is not a method of extraction that is good for our planet or good for our communities at all. And, stopping projects like Jordan Cove LNG and Calama Methanol Refinery and the Tacoma LNG project is really critical to keep communities safe from the never-ending impacts of the fracking industry.
Well, I want to talk more about the organizing. And what it makes me think, I was watching the Nevada caucuses with great fascination Saturday night, and was very interested in hearing all the different media talk about the incredible coalition that Bernie Sanders put together. Some of them, I think they were talking about it in utter disbelief, but the way that they talk about this kind of coalition of different communities of color and different classes and different ages and different political, like Bernie Sanders won amongst conservatives and moderates, as Democrats, as well as the progressive Democrats. How does that compare, do you think, to what's been going on in Jordan Cove for a lot longer than Bernie Sanders has been running for president, or going on in Southern Oregon a lot longer than Bernie Sanders has been running for president?
Yeah, so this project has united people in our communities across political spectrums, across race divides, across age, class, you name it. People in Southern Oregon know that this project is not good for our homes, and there are many, many reasons to oppose it. And, he has one good thing that it has done is brought together a whole bunch of people who otherwise wouldn't have known each other. And we have found our power in that, right? The power in, coming together across divides to fight for our homes is really, really important. And I think has been really key to the successes that we are beginning to see on this campaign.
I wonder what it's like talking to each other. I know I've talked to Stacey McLaughlin down in Douglas County a bunch of times, and she's told me about her neighbor, Bill Gow, who's one of the leaders in the landowners movement against the pipeline. And she's described the incredible differences, both socially, politically, many, many ways, that she and Bill would not know each other except for this pipeline that threatens both of their properties. Have you experienced these kinds of relationships, and what changes with people when they find this common purpose with people who they feel otherwise are so different from?
I think that when we find common ground with our neighbors, we become very powerful. And we you know, aren't always going to learn that we aren't always going to agree on things, but that we can listen to each other and that we can build with each other, and that in the end, what we all do really want is a healthy, thriving community. And so I think that it's been a really beautiful process to see people building relationships across the many things that, you know, the corporations that are proposing these projects hope divide us.
I mean, another strong force in this fight has been the tribes. And you mentioned the Klamath tribes and the Hoopoe tribes and the Yurok tribes down in Northern California and Southern Oregon. And I was thinking, I'm thinking about what, you know, I've seen in mostly secondhand through photographs, video, audio that I've heard, and then through the interviews I've done with those people, just what a vital role the tribes have played in really kind of setting the terms for what this struggle is about. And then I was thinking about the Bernie Sanders rally. This is an immense rally last week in the Tacoma Dome. There were over 20,000 people there, and the whole rally was kicked off with tribal drummers and singers. And I was looking at some video and photographs of that, and there's a very, very strong tribal presence in Tacoma for Bernie Sanders. And there's also a very, very strong tribal presence in Tacoma fighting Tacoma LNG. In fact, I think the Puyallup tribe is really the leaders in that struggle. I wonder if you've seen analogy and how the tribes play a role and what they're teaching us in this, what's becoming a very long-term struggle, but maybe for them a very short time span.
Yeah, well, you know, we are so grateful for all of the leadership of the local tribes across the region who have opposed this project and made it very clear that they will continue to protect their communities and the resources that they've held in trust for time immemorial. So really incredibly grateful for getting to work with them and seeing their communities come out in full force against this project too is really exciting.
Well, I find, like, I had a wonderful conversation with Taylor Tupper last spring in on the Klamath lands, and also talked with Don Gentry, and got a sense, particularly from talking with Taylor, their worldview. And I feel like every time I have the opportunity to talk to a tribal person about what their sense of history and the connection between the history and the moment they're living in now, it just kind of opens up all these parts of my mind that I, you know, as a white European descended person, it's still, I'm learning about it. But it gives me a new sense of connection with this landscape that we're all fighting to save. I wonder if you've had experiences like that where just, you know, you've really had a sense of a change of perspective from getting to know these people.
Well, I think that, I can't begin to even list the ways that I've been impacted from getting to know so many of the people who are fighting Jordan Cove LNG, whether they're indigenous leaders or impacted landowners or folks who fish on the estuary in Coos Bay. People really love their homes and are willing to do a lot to protect them. So I'm really grateful for getting to do this work and getting to know these people and getting to call a lot of them my friends.
Well, if you're just tuning in, you're listening to Locus Focus here on KBOO Community Radio in Portland, on Seattle stations KBFG LPFM and KODX LPFM, and on Radio Tacoma. And we're talking today with Ellie Rosenbluth, who's an organizer with Rogue Climate in Southern Oregon, about this past week's permit denials for Jordan Cove LNG. Well, in the remaining part of the show, I want to talk a little bit about the past LNG struggles. And I want to go back to, like, where you cut your teeth on. Because this is not your first LNG fight, is it?
Well, no. So when I was in college, I did a little bit of organizing around the Cove Point LNG export terminal, which is currently functioning in Maryland. And when I moved to Southern Oregon right after college, I heard about the Jordan Cove LNG export terminal and immediately started volunteering to help stop this project. And a few months later, got hired by Rogue Climate to do it full time. And so I'm really, really incredibly lucky. But, you know, this project, people have been fighting it for since I was in elementary school. So I feel really, really lucky to get to work with so many people who have so much understanding of this project and who have dedicated so much of their lives to stopping it. So I just feel really grateful to get to know them and help support their work.
Well, I'm curious about Cove Point because that one it was not a success. Now, you were fighting it. Well, at what stage did you get involved in the struggle to stop it? And I'm wondering what the difference is, why that one went forward while Jordan Cove has had so many downturns in its ability to actually become a reality.
Yeah, well, I was in college and mostly focusing on educating my campus around the impacts of fracking and the impacts of fracked gas. And so one of the ways we did that was connecting it to Cove Point LNG, which had received permits to be built. But community members there were like, you know, and currently are like still fighting it at every chance that they get. And so even though it is functioning today, I still have hope that the community in Cove Point, Maryland will turn that around and successfully shut down the Cove Point LNG export terminal for good.
So what do you think it is about Southern Oregon? I mean, Southern Oregon's a bunch of feisty people, and I know it pretty well, and I've got some good friends down there. And it's a place that I've always thought, like, of all the parts of Oregon, well, most of Oregon, you just kind of don't mess with them in a certain way. So I just wonder what it is that has kept this fight alive. And then I kind of also want to jump up to Clatsop County, which you mentioned briefly, which I think had something like 8 LNG facilities being proposed back 15, 20 years ago, almost 20 years ago. And so, like, I just kind of curious about your sense, as also somebody who came from the East Coast and has moved to Oregon, what it is that keeps this Oregon fight so alive.
Yeah, so I think that, you know, whether you're on the East or West Coast, if you love the land that you are living on, which I know many people do here in Southern Oregon and many people do on the Chesapeake Bay in Maryland where Cove Point currently exists, you're going to fight for it. And, you know, in Oregon, we saw the opportunity to push our state leaders to make these hard decisions to deny permits for Jordan Cove LNG. And we've had 15 years of a project that has never gotten its permits to make our case extremely clear to the state of Oregon that, you know, whether you're a rural landowner, an impacted tribal member, a commercial fisherman, or a youth climate activist, you want the state of Oregon to stand up for our homes and stop Jordan Cove LNG for good. So I think that, you know, we're seeing this across the country of people like this same situation where people who are seem so different and who, you know, media and corporations try to tell us are so different and can never get along. But when there's a project that, you know, directly impacts our homes, we actually see we have a lot in common. And I think that's something that we're seeing in pipeline fights and liquefied natural gas fights all over the continent.
Well, I want to talk a little bit about Astoria, which is a community that I was a little bit more familiar with that fight going on while it was going on, and Jordan Cove seemed kind of far away back 15 years ago. But when they were fighting in Clatsop County, it turned into a real transformation of the community. And that pipeline looked like it got further along in terms of permits than, as you mentioned, it got its FERC permit before it started getting the state denials. And I heard a lot of stories about how long it took to get those state denials. One of the things that really struck me after the last one, Oregon LNG, pulled the plug in 2016, that the community that had come together in so many ways that they really transformed Astoria from being a dying fishing town into being a really vibrant place. And I'm wondering if you can see some lessons from Astoria that might be brought to the coastal community and also to the forest land and other communities around Southern Oregon, ways to rethink what you want your community to be once you beat the fossil fuel projects. What do you become now?
Yeah, I think that's been a dynamic that's been happening across our communities for years now, right? That, you know, we are sick of talking about the projects that we want to stop, and we really do want to focus on what we can build in our communities to support our local economies and support working families. And I think we're beginning to see just that. And, you know, that can happen while we fight this project too. So Jordan Cove doesn't need to be over for our communities to start thinking about what ways we want to build a clean energy economy and create jobs that are good for our community as a whole.
Well, I know that World Climate's working on some projects like that, aren't you?
Yeah, in Coos County, actually, we have a Energize South Coast program, which is working to create jobs and energy efficiency through group purchase of ductless heat pumps. And we've done that in Douglas County and Jackson County as well. So 3 out of the 4 impacted counties who are impacted by Jordan Cove LNG.
And also, I understand this talk about trying to develop offshore windmills in Coos Bay. Do you know anything about that?
I think there's some talk, but we're not in those conversations quite yet. And yeah, making sure that the projects that we move forward in clean energy are supported by the tribal communities and supported by the industries that rely on a healthy estuary are part of those conversations first. So, yeah.
Well, I have this image in my mind of this photograph I found when I was searching for photos for the slideshow for the radio documentary. And Robin Jansen had mentioned after the first FERC denial happened in 2016 that a bunch of the landowners and Jody McCaffrey were all in Ashland for a radio interview. And so they all got together to celebrate. And I actually found a photograph of them celebrating, which was kind of a nice thing to find. And I've looked many times at the expressions on their face, even though they all knew that this might not end the way you want it to end. I'm wondering if there's the same kind of celebration going on now, and at the same time, what you have to expect to move forward and how people around the region and people who are listening to the show today, what they can do to help you in the next stage.
Yeah, so I think that we definitely are celebrating. We are celebrating the fact that the state of Oregon is listening to our communities. And, you know, if I had told any of those folks 2 years ago that the state of Oregon was going to deny every critical permit for Jordan Cove LNG, they probably would have laughed in my face. and I probably wouldn't have believed myself either. So we are celebrating that organizing works and that our community is coming together to protect our homes works, and that the state of Oregon is listening and is denying permits, and we need to continue to hold them accountable for that. So we actually have 2 asks for folks who want to help us stop Jordan Cove LNG right now. So the first one is to call Governor Brown. Her phone number is 503-378-4582, and tell her that her state agencies are doing a great job protecting Oregon from the Jordan Cove LNG project, but also to encourage her to stand up to any attempt by the federal administration to override our state safeguards that Jordan Cove LNG has failed to meet. So that's the first ask, is to call Governor Brown. The second ask is to call Senator Ron Wyden. Ron Wyden still does not oppose the Jordan Cove LNG project. His phone number is 202-224-5244. And our ask for Ron Wyden is to stand with Oregon and tell FERC to deny Jordan Cove LNG once and for all, and to ask him to oppose the project like Senator Jeff Merkley and Representative DeFazio have. So if you can make 2 calls this week, please do so. This is a really critical moment to keep our communities safe from the Jordan Cove LNG export.
And can you give those phone numbers again?
Yeah, so Governor Kate Brown is at 503-378-4582. And then Senator Ron Wyden is 202-224-5244.
I will mention that Ron Wyden did send a letter to the Trump administration calling on him not to appoint any more FERC, or not for FERC not to make any more decisions until they have a full quorum. I'm not sure what that means. But anyway, it sounded like he was concerned about the FERC decision and didn't think that they were able to make a fair decision. So he may be moving in the right direction.
Ron Wyden has said many times at our local town halls that he's hosted that he does not support eminent domain for private gain. And one thing that a FERC approval would cue is the process of eminent domain against around 90 landowners in Southern Oregon. So now is really the time for Wyden to speak out before landowners have their private property seized by a Canadian fossil fuel corporation.
And we'll say one more thing about Kate Brown. When you call her to thank her, also thank her for coming out very strongly about removing the earthen portions of the four dams in the Snake River, because she sent a very strong letter to Jay Inslee about that last week. So I'm thinking maybe all the pressure that's been put on her about Jordan Cove has gotten her to move and some other actions as well. So
potentially, who knows?
Yeah, so I think our work is working. Well, Allie, it's really great to talk to you. And thank you for all the work you're doing down there. And keep us posted on what we need to do up here to help support you.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Barbara. I really appreciate it.
Okay. You've been talking today with Allie Rosenbluth, who's an organizer with Rogue Climate. And you've been listening to Locus Focus here on KBOO Community Radio in Portland, Seattle stations KBFG LPFM and KODX LPFM and Radio Tacoma. If you're just tuning in and you'd like to hear what you missed or you want your friends or family to hear this show, you can listen to it online or download the audio later this afternoon on our website, kboo.fm/locus-focus. To hear previous episodes of this show or any of our other KBOO Public Affairs programming, go to kboo.fm or listen on iTunes, Google Play, or wherever you get your podcasts. Next week, we'll talk with Canadian earth scientist David Hughes about the coming end of the shale oil and gas booms. My engineer is Patsy Kohlberg. I'm Barbara Bernstein. We're going to go out with Another World by Abby Lincoln. Thanks for listening.
Within some walls of stone, another world is waiting for its own. Another time, another world, another world. The magic that shows is